Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Well, coming up shortly, we've got another interview with David Zwolski, as I mentioned, from the Zeitgeist Movement, from the Zeitgeist Movement, now disaffected ex-Zeitgeistian, to talk us about, talk us through a number of issues, a number of topics, which will be quite an interesting little journey there into what I believe has been something of a deception. I'm not quite sure why or how it transpired, but I do believe that the Zeitgeist influence has actually waned somewhat, which is certainly a positive outcome. Now, in the meantime, I'd like to just talk a little bit about some current news. Of course, Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez is dead after a battle with cancer. I've got an article here from the ABC. After a 14-year rule of Venezuela, the president Hugo Chavez is dead. Certainly, that is going to change the geopolitics of South America. Venezuela is a country that has massive amounts of oil. And whether it's simply that he died of cancer, which I assume is quite likely, or whether there is some nefarious thing going on here, we'll not know for quite some time. And, of course, some say that he was a socialist dictator, but many people, of course, rallied to the support of Chavez when he was under the threat of being deposed by the American imperial powers. I guess the really important thing to understand here is that the reason why Venezuela is such an important piece in the overall game of geopolitics is simply because of the oil. And indeed, that's why even the death of the president of this country is getting such attention in the media. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, this business about oil and the domination of oil and the use of oil to control humanity is instructive because, you know, there are other forms of energy. We don't really need to be using oil. If we wanted to move off oil, we could. Oil is simply a tactic, a scarce resource that can then be hoarded and controlled by those who want to control the world. So, I mean, let's hope that we find more about the story of Hugo Chavez, if there is, in fact, more to be said, and whether he was indeed a hero of the people or whether he was some sort of a dictator who was oppressing the people, let's find out that as well. I tend to think that in this case, what we're dealing with here is certainly he was a socialist, but in many cases, socialism becomes the only weapon that poorer countries have to unseat the power of the cartels and the globalist forces. But socialism, of course, can even become an extension of those forces. So it's a complex one. But what I see in Venezuela is a man that was greatly loved by the people of the country. And so I tend to think that this was a man who cared about his people. In the same sense, I believe, as the former leader of Libya did care about his people. And Libya, again, was a type of a socialist regime. But in a situation, and I'm not a huge proponent of socialism on this show, but in a situation where you are threatened by imperial globalist forces, sometimes the only way that leaders can of sovereign nations can do anything about it is by creating their own sort of paradigm against that of the forces that are opposing them. And I mean, we saw it with Iraq too. Sometimes it's the great leader, but often it's the great leader, the people against the enemy. And often that indeed simply becomes another tool to be manipulated. The world is a difficult place. It is not easy to bring freedom. But some of these people, some of these leaders have actually brought more freedom than has been seen in these countries before. And I believe that Gaddafi was one and Chavez was one. By comparison to the level of total oppression that we see in many other countries, we're on a journey here. We're on a journey towards trying to liberate humanity. And there are many stages on that journey, and there are many ways you can go down false paths. So let's see what we can learn from that whole story. And I'd like to actually do more on the subject of Venezuela and to understand what is actually going on in South America on a deeper level. Got an interesting story here about the Pirate Bay, the site that disseminates seeds or links to seeds for BitTorrent. The site has been under threat, with the founders of the site having been jailed, and now some of them, I believe one of them living in Cambodia. And the website has continued, but it has been forced to relocate its servers a number of times. And the Pirate Bay servers are now located, apparently, in North Korea. I have a press release here from the Pirate Bay. I'll just read this out to you. The Pirate Bay has been hunted in many countries around the world, not for illegal activities, but being persecuted for beliefs of freedom of information. Today, a new chapter is written in the history of the movement, as well as the history of the internet. A week ago, we could reveal that the Pirate Bay was accessed via Norway and Catalonia. Today, we can reveal that we have been invited by the leader of the Republic of North Korea to fight our battles from their network. Actually, it says here the Republic of Korea. Now, some of the other press reports were actually saying North Korea, but in this one, this specific one, I'm actually seeing Korea, and it doesn't say North Korea. There may be some confused information coming through here. I guess the important point to remember is that the Pirate Bay, what it represents by freedom of information, is actually very, very important. And I do not subscribe to or accept the position of the enforcers of global copyright laws that sharing a file, that making a duplicate of an MP3 or a MP4 or a video file of some kind is a crime. I think that is the most preposterous, ludicrous, idiotic construct. We're talking about here about digital information, which can be easily copied on a computer. To assert that doing so is a crime, when, you know, there are real crimes. Hitting someone over the head is a crime. Stealing someone's handbag is a crime. Killing someone is a crime. There are many, many things that are actually deeply unjust and wrong. But duplicating and sharing digital information, ladies and gentlemen, by the standards of common law that have been in practice for thousands of years, does not constitute a crime. There is no victim. There is no victim because no one has been deprived of anything. Those who pursue this bandwagon of copyright theft as being depriving the victim of money are making the most spurious argument you can imagine. They're saying that the victim has been deprived of revenue, future revenue that they might have had because of their sole control over that. And that is exactly like arguing if you've got a Thai restaurant on your main street of your little town or your suburb, of which there are many in Australia, Thai food being very popular here. Now, if someone opens a Thai restaurant across the road, which serves the same food, now, is that actually going to be copyright theft? No, I don't think so. And in fact, you know, the precedents are that would not be pursuable, although the owners of the original restaurant, that was the first restaurant for many, many years would certainly love it if they had access to some little trick that they could put the other people out of business by suing them. But guess what? You can't do that because it's ludicrous. It's stupid. It's just competition, right? Another restaurant can open serving the same food. Now, if the other restaurant is better, they'll go to the other restaurant. So that is one example of the fact that the idea, and of course, the original restaurant will be deprived of revenue. Oh, goodness me. Does that mean it's a crime? They were deprived of revenue because another restaurant opened. I mean, we could also argue that when the motor vehicle came along, that the owners of horses and buggies were deprived of revenue because suddenly the motor vehicle was becoming very popular and they were not doing so well. But there's another level to this. With digital information and the sharing of digital information, it is generally agreed by most of the alternative community, including the Pirate Bay and the people like that, the pirate parties around the world, that charging money for digital information that's been copied is not right. In the sense, you didn't pay anything for it. Why should you be able to charge for it? And in fact, the Pirate Bay is free. No money is changing hands. So this is actually quite different to a case where a restaurant opens up that's selling the same food as the restaurant next door and making money out of it. The people who are sharing copyrighted information aren't making anything out of it at all. They're just sharing what is available. It's just publicly available information. So I just like to, you know, on this show, I'd like to continually represent what I believe to be common sense, reality, facts, truth, that is completely clouded by the powers that be as they attempt to oppress and control people. Now, another quick story that I wanted to bring to you today, another one as part of our stable of ludicrous stories. Claims are being made on ABC News that we've had an angry summer here in Australia, which has been made worse by climate change. And I've got a short clip here from the ABC that I'm going to play to you right now.
It's one of the most hotly disputed questions in the debate over climate change. Can extreme weather events like bushfires and floods be blamed on global warming? Scientists have always been cautious about linking any one event to climate change. But now Australia's Climate Commission has joined the dots between a series of weather-related disasters and global warming in what it calls the nation's angry summer. This year was the hottest summer ever recorded in Australia, with almost three quarters of the country experiencing extreme temperatures and many places reporting record maximums. In December, three states, Tasmania, New South Wales and Victoria, battled major bushfires which burnt through thousands of hectares of scrub.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave it there. The reality is, folks, it's been an incredibly cold summer, and I'll leave the links to that on the site. You can have a look at it for yourself. It's quite ridiculous. We've had a very cold summer. We're going now to break. We'll be back with David Zwolski talking about Zeitgeist and more. Do stay with us.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Please check us out at truthnews.com.au. Please have a look at our Facebook page and our website. And have a look at our podcasts. We've got a lot of podcasts going back about 4 years, and we've done some really interesting interviews. And today is no exception. We've got a great interview now with our guest, David Zwolski, who's been on our show before, but quite a long time ago. David, of course, was the coordinator for the Zeitgeist movement in Sydney for a long time, now living in Queensland and involved in some new activities. David, welcome back to Truth News.
Hey, Howard. Yeah, it's been a while. Actually, I haven't been on your radio show. I've been sending minions of the Zeitgeist movement, the Zeitgeist Australian, to your show. If I'm remembering correctly, there were two of them, and they were speaking to you either about reading or whatever shows or whatever events you were happening. But am I myself? No, I haven't been on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's right. I realize now that you haven't been on our show. We've had a couple of people from Zeitgeist on over the years. And we had a panel discussion at one point.
It
was
right.
Quite interesting. But
with Chris, as I remember.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So actually, welcome to Truth News, David. Now, look, we're going to talk a little bit about Zeitgeist
sure.
later. But I'd like to talk about what you're up to at the moment, and you're promoting a speaker by the name of Nicole Fox, who's coming to do a tour around Australia. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, it's quite a big thing, actually, I'm organizing. It's not myself, actually. I'm organizing that with a couple of other people. We established a non-profit organization called Sustainability Showcase. And what we're doing is we're doing a showcase around Australia. In this showcase, we're featuring Nicole Fox, an international finance and speaker from Canada. She's a very, well, she was described as a walking brain, basically. And I think that's her description best. She's very savvy about how finance and the economy itself and the environment carries up all together, and what will come up out of that mixture altogether in the foreseeable future and further on. The problem is, unfortunately, that Nicole Fox, though she's a very credential and holds a lot of information, as well as basically a lot of credentials from her side, she's very much ignored by the mainstream because of what she's speaking.
Right.
And it's a standard message that most of you know, possibly, that the growth economy cannot continue and we are heading for a near collapse. That will be a shorthand of it. But there's much to that Nicole explains about it. Nicole explains how that things will work out on a ground level, if you will, how it will affect certain classes and certain people, and how can you prepare yourself for that thing. So it's a message, actually, that's not really heard of. A lot of people are talking that it will be, you know, really bad and get yourself ready, but not much about how you should, what you do about that. Well, that's not what all the showcases are about. We're featuring a lot of other organizations who are showing presenting their own organizations as well. Well, I'll let you ask some questions actually about that, I guess.
Well, no, thanks, David. It sounds interesting. Now, this is under the umbrella of what they call sustainability, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, sustainability showcase, that's correct.
Now, of course, sustainability is a word that unfortunately has a lot of negative connotations for people. I say this not because I think that what you're talking about is negative, but what's actually happened is, as I would describe it, I think the term sustainability has been somewhat hijacked. There are many people who listen to this show, many people who do not consider themselves to be part of the green movement, who perceive the green movement and this Agenda 21 tied in with sustainability as actually being a form of green fascism. In other words, it's not simply about making everything more efficient, having better ways of doing things where we're not reliant on the Big Brother grid, but in fact it is the Big Brother grid crushing people and saying you're not allowed to do this because you're gonna your carbon footprint is gonna damage the planet, and we're gonna force you to downgrade the quality of your life. We're gonna deindustrialize, and there are these people, these proponents of this out there, who also go under the banner of sustainability. I'm just maybe you could briefly comment on that.
You know what? You know what? I know more than you have said, actually, from what you just put over there. I actually shared, actually, your point of view and how that works out at one point. I guess we have a little bit different picture at this moment. Absolutely. There are forces out there that are doing everything they can to limit personal growth and our own freedoms as well in many, many respects.
Yeah.
But there's also another force that kind of we sit in between. And that's just straight nature. That's just straight natural law, if you will. And it's really harsh actually to argue about that. And that's pretty much that's my idea of sustainability. My idea of sustainability is to achieve what is possible in parameters of the, you might say the natural economy or the natural law, or as Andrew said. So if you have, if you live on an island, let's say, and the island, and we know enough to support 100 people on that island in that quality of life, and everybody has fed well, and everybody has entertainment and so on, we can do that with 50 people on this island. But people say, hey, you limit our freedom, we should have 100 people, you cannot say I cannot have more than the other guy next to us. Well, sure, go for it, but the compromise you'll go for that is the other people will be probably of lesser quality of you, and you might end up with very basic problems of not having food for the rest of the people or not having comfort that you have or that other people don't have.
Right.
And once you start, well, I'm not saying everybody should have exactly the same amount of chairs and the same amount of computers and the same amount of everything. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there needs to be a basic level of equality that everybody can recognize. Now, everyone has to have basic needs, basically, they're fulfilled.
Yeah.
As soon as you don't have that, it's been throughout history proven that people just rebel and turn against each other and turn against the system, and very often, and that can be, that anger can be directed. And smart people have done that.
Yeah.
Very powerful people have done that and turned that against ourselves, basically. So that would be my idea of sustainability. The sustainability that allows us to survive, based not on economy, but what is possible from a natural perspective.
And you know what? I think that that it's possible for us to live in a world full of abundance. So scarcity is not... I actually believe scarcity is something that is used by people who want to have power. And guess what? If something isn't scarce, they want to make it scarce. Because when resources are scarce and you control the resources, you have power, right?
If you control the means of production, or control the means of... you're providing stuff basically for people, like money, for example, you spend money,
then
you have definitely a lot of control out there.
And of course, money is scarce. David, we're just going to break.
Yeah.
We're Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break. We'll be right back after this short break. Please don't go away.
Man.
Welcome back with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. I'm talking to my guest, David Zwolski, about the world as it is and about whether the world as it is, with people struggling for resources and the perception that people have that resources are scarce, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it real? My view is that, in fact, it's kind of an engineered situation, that you've got people who have all the power by chance, by a series of historical accidents, and those people who have power by force also, I believe, are creating the meme of scarcity, and by their ability to control your access to resources, they're saying, oh, look, the world's really short of oil, the world's really short of water. I mean, I actually heard people say that, you know, there's water shortages, most ridiculous thing in the world. The planet is covered in water, 75%, and yet we hear about the shortage of water. We hear about the shortage of natural resources. And so this argument about how we're short of things then becomes part of an environmental agenda and a sustainability agenda, when in fact, I don't think we're short of anything. We've got the sun blasting down on us massive amounts of energy. We've got the planet exploding with life. We have incredible diversity. We have everything that we need on this planet spinning through space. And we're not in short supply of what we need to be happy. Mm. What's your take on that, David?
Well, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to take. Yeah, let me just maybe first introduce myself. My name is David. My full name is David Zwolski. Usually I'm referred as David Z. I'm an ex-Zeitgeist Movement organizer of the Australian chapter. And yeah, a lot of what you said definitely have reflected with me for a bit of time there, Herwood. I do have a different, a little bit of point of view about that now. I think resources are limited and we need to manage them in a certain way. And as far as I look at various studies and various surveys, for example, water, we do have a limited amount of water. 97, though you're right, there's plenty of it in the sea, but that's salt water. And getting it back to drinkable water, which only consists of 3% of the whole water we know on Earth, out of which about 0.5% is accessible to us, it's a big problem. It's a big problem to convert it back to drinkable water, and it's energy intensive as well. Do we have that energy? Yes, we do, but it's a problem to get it. It's a problem to get it, and the people who have the means to get it and to convert that energy. I guess
we're going to have to disagree on that one, David, because I actually think that there is no shortage of water. I mean, what I see is a planet 75% covered in water. You know, and it's like we're not short of water. So your position is that we're short of water. Is that correct?
You can definitely do marvelous things with the technology that's available. If we would just harness, for example, things like deuterium, we could do wonderful things with it. The problem is accessing that and getting the energy to make, for example, as you said, from salt water to drinkable water. That's the problem.
But of course, there's massive amounts of rainfall as well.
We have an organization called Sustainability Showcase, on which here in Australia we'll be hosting a person called Nicole Foss, an international speaker. She's mostly fluent in finances and ecology. And actually, I would ask people to come to one of those lectures that are happening throughout Australia and learn about this very, very complicated and long topic. And you'll find it's not as simple. But yes, in a simple manner, in the principle, I would agree with you, Herwood.
In the general principle, yeah. As we discussed in the last segment, you are bringing Nicole Foss out, or you're part of a group that's promoting her, and that's terrific. And I really do think that that's an incredibly valuable discussion that people are having about sustainability. As I was saying before, I think that this question of sustainability sort of merging in with a fear of scarcity becomes a tool for those who want to manipulate that and say, you've got to do this, otherwise, you know, watch out, it's a terrible threat. And this to me seems, it's part of it's not free. And I guess what I'm very concerned with is any kind of meme, any kind of ideology that tries to make people feel that they're constantly under threat and not free, because that is actually an agenda of control. That's the way I see it. But I mean, you know, tell me more about what you see as being the type of world we could live in. I'm interested to know.
Wow. I was once thinking that we can live in a techno-utopia with little circular cities happening and everybody wearing tight nylon, walking around running in maglev trains and have all those wonderful gadgets on you, and just enjoy life without work. I am not of that perspective anymore. By looking at the researches and the sciences that are out there, and the problems in the stage, in the state of the human race right now, there it is. I think we'll really, in the next 50 years, I think we'll regress to something maybe a bit better than the agricultural revolution. Yeah, I'll be lucky. I'll be a very positive scenario, I think.
So when you were saying that you believed that there was a technological utopia that we could be living in, was this inspired by the Zeitgeist movement and the Venus Project ideas that you were associated with very strongly?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much where my ideology and understanding came from. But people like Nicole Foss and many people who are invited to speak at the Sustainability Showcase have very much changed my life fundamentally, even in very respective. And those are not people like Jack Frisco or Peter or anyone from the Zeitgeist movement. Those are people who are in holding credentials very high. They've been in positions of power, if you will, but they have been expelled from their positions of power in certain cases because of what they say. And it's very interesting to listen to those people.
That's really interesting. Now, of course, you're not currently strongly with the Zeitgeist movement, as I understand it, you somewhat removed yourself from there, or are you still in good terms? What's the current situation there?
Yeah, my relations with the Zeitgeist movement, I'm still in support of many of their ideas. I don't take the position of totally condemning them. I don't take the position of totally approving them. I think some of their ideas are wonderful, but definitely what I strongly condemn is the way they want to achieve them. I think that's pointless. I think that's just won't achieve anything. You don't want to get anywhere.
What is the problem that you see with the way the Zeitgeist movement tries to achieve its agenda?
It's not really an agenda, first of all, if I may correct you. It's a way of kind of approaching things, a way of understanding. You have, just to clarify, you can approach things from a political level, you can approach things from a financial level, and you can approach things from a scientific level. That's what the Zeitgeist movement claims to do. And they definitely will tell you that that's what they're doing. It doesn't really happen in practice, though, when you are trying to present them certain things that are working better within their own organizational structure. That was one of the very major disputes that I had with the Zeitgeist movement. I was just showing them statistics and science or maybe not science, that would be the wrong word, statistics mainly, and proof from many people and through various data that the movement is in stagnation, and that was in November 2011. I was not listened to. Actually, I was condemned for showing many of those things, telling that everything that the Zeitgeist movement is right now doing is fine. And that brings me to another point. The people who said that were a core group of the Zeitgeist movement. Some people say they were elected, not elected, but chosen. The core group will say they were not chosen.
David, we're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt you.
Sure.
We're just going to break. We'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us.
Good point to put a break on.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to David Zwolski, formerly of the Zeitgeist Movement, talking about sustainability, talking about scarcity. I mean, I've got some differences of opinion. I don't totally agree with the sustainability meme, although I do think it's fascinating and interesting when people actually engage in any kind of experiment to see what you can do, what you can achieve, how you can improve efficiency. It's fantastic. I'm not against it. What I'm against is the proposition, which I believe is completely false, that we're terribly short of things, or we're terribly short of oil, we're terribly short of water, we're terribly short of money, you know, we're terribly short of food, we're terribly short of whale oil. You know, that was in the 19th century, they'd say, oh, we're going to run out of whale oil. Well, guess what? We don't need whale oil anymore. But that's my particular criticism about that. But David, we're talking there a bit about the Zeitgeist movement. And so you talked about the stagnation. Now, earlier on in the introduction to the show, I actually mentioned some of my concerns about the movement, which I felt indicated that it had been built on a foundation that wasn't totally genuine, I would say, because what I observed was that it rode on a wave of dissent of people being extremely concerned about the deceptions about 9/11, because that was a big part of the film. And it wasn't just 9/11. Of course, it was about globalism and the tyranny of these forces that want to ultimately control every aspect of human behavior. And of course, the Zeitgeist movie had those interviews with Aaron Russo in it, who made the film Freedom to Fascism, and talking about that the Rockefellers want everyone to be chipped, and you know, this is all still real stuff and very important. But unfortunately, what happened with the movie is it was divisive, and I can really guarantee you that this is true. The movie was divisive in itself, because it set up a schism between people who have religious beliefs and people who are so-called scientists, sort of atheistic secular scientists. And it basically projected the idea that people who have religious beliefs are all idiots, you know, or somehow just deluded and caught up in something really, really wrong. And it's the scientific atheists who are going to save the world. Now, what's your take on that? Yeah, I mean, give me your take on that.
Sure. Okay, Zeitgeist number two. I don't think it's a division that the movie was making between the atheists and the scientific atheists, or scientific people or whatever. Zeitgeist one definitely was projecting the idea of God and so on and so forth, but all the series of the Zeitgeist movement is not about creating any division or not even much proposing a certain direction altogether, though there is definitely the Venus Project bias. The Zeitgeist series has started as debunking myths that are within our society. And though, yes, there is definitely that connection between believing and the religious bias, the religious myth over there. That wasn't necessarily causing a division. It's just pointing out the flaw of that thinking, and as well as the flaw of the science, at least, that's presented in Zeitgeist 1 of 9/11 from the movie perspective, and how money functions, which was a big thing for both of the parts. So there's no division other than one that people find in itself. The movies were just debunking myths that are very common for everyone on the planet, or at least they were.
Okay. Well, so you believe that that the Zeitgeist movement has become somewhat diminished or stagnant. What do you think is the cause of that?
That's a very long question. Part of it is that the movement doesn't follow its own principles, I think. I believe that the movement has been somewhat taken over by a few psychopathic personalities who put themselves in a position of not unquestionable, untouchable position. And they just don't follow their own principles, I don't think. They don't walk their own talk. And many people are living because of that.
But okay. But you, at the same time, you still support the some of the basic ideas in the movement. I mean, where do you stand on the Venus Project these days?
That's even a bigger question. I think that's where the non-walking Jack and neither Roxanne neither the Venus Project are walking their own talk at all.
Right.
I think Jack, though I met him personally, and he's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
He's very, I found him a little bit autistic, though, but I guess that's just a personality trait or my own bias. But I'm confident that person believes in what he's doing 100%.
Okay.
I just don't think his belief tallies up with actually reality at the moment. I don't think his solutions are, as he claims, based on science or on revolutionary things that are out there. I think some of them are very quite far off actually from reality.
Well, you know,
so that'll be one thing. And the second thing is they have the tendency of, well, hoarding a lot of money for themselves and not using it at least smartly. I'm not sure if that's just them being very badly at managing money or deliberately hoarding that money for whatever reason.
Right.
Yeah, they just don't do a good job at that whatsoever, and I think it hurts them tremendously.
So this would be money that's been acquired through donations, etc.
They started gathering money about in the beginning of last year for their major movie project. That was supposed to be a movie that matches Avatar and the other huge Hollywood production.
Okay.
That would just, you know, rock the world and people would all just see this project and the ideas, and somehow they would embrace and things would change from their own. So they gathered about $10,000 from donations alone for that movie. The money wasn't used for any purposes whatsoever. It was supposed to be used for hiring a scriptwriter, but eventually the Venus Project has decided that they will, I'm quoting them, pay themselves the money in order to write their own script.
Oh, I see.
Which is fair enough. You can do that, but be honest with them. Be honest with the people where the money should go at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I see no script at the moment. After a year of hearing that information, there was no script produced whatsoever. I don't believe there's anything new right now coming out.
So what you're,
and the donation money is gone, in my opinion.
So what you're saying is that all this money that was given in good faith for the movement has now been used by the leaders of the movement for their own project to pay themselves to create a film which hasn't actually even eventuated.
Well, for the script, basically. Yeah,
script,
I don't think they found anyone, or they weren't really looking hard enough, or they just decided to turn their car and go in a different direction with the money on board. I'm not sure what's the decision. The point is they didn't use the money whatsoever in the ways they promised they will.
Now, David, what about the basic concept behind the Venus Project? Because that's where my main concern is, is that it looked to me as if they were really advocating a type of technocracy when they talk about computers making all the decisions.
To supply
resources.
Making all the decisions. Like a calculator is assisting you to make a decision. The computer was supposed to assist people in decisions in certain way, in certain things, and certain decisions weren't only would be made by humans.
But that sounds like a technocracy to me. I mean, even if you soften it by saying assist, you know, the what's really going on here is you're saying that that the technology will somehow, in an unbiased way, give you
technology
what you need.
Is very biased. I agree with you that. But the scientific method of inquiry, it has much less bias. It's still biased. It has much less bias than politics has or financial interest.
Right, right. And with that, I agree. And, you know, like I sort of totally, you know, endorse any kind of scientific research. I mean, I know that there's fantastic sources of energy out there that we haven't tapped. I know that. And I mean, I know that there's all kinds of amazing opportunities out there. And again, the thing that a little bothers me about sustainability is it's all about, oh, you know, we've got to save this and we don't want to risk, you know, we've got to conserve. Whereas in fact, I think if we actually had a little bit more openness and vision to see what the amazing possibilities are that we can achieve, we might not have to be living in this state of fear. But David, we're getting towards the end of the hour. Just give us another plug for the speaker that you're bringing out and all the details about that, because I certainly want the audience to know about that.
Sure, I would love to talk more actually about that. The speaker that we're getting from Canada, it's called Nicole Foss. I encourage people to Google about it, or just go to one of the lectures that are happening in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide, Canberra. We've got 9 locations happening all around, so I can't mention all of them. And see all the other speakers that actually we brought up and are talking very much actually about sustainability and how very often sustainability is not sustainable. So partially something that we talked about. Unfortunately, we will not be talking about the Zeitgeist movement, but I will be very glad to talk with people after the lecture or before the lecture about that. So the tour starts, the showcases start from the beginning, end of this month, till beginning of May.
Terrific. David, we're just about at the end of the hour. Look, thank you so much for coming on today.
Sure, no worries. Thank you very much.
Let me just add a little plug
over there, that the topic for the lectures is showcasing strategies for sustainability. I hope I will see
terrific
as many people as possible at the lectures.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, winding up for today, for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then.
See you. Bye-bye.